Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein. Tonight we have an incredible honor. We have for the first time ever in history on the radio in America, Hagoyen HaRav Reb Moshe Sternbuch, the Rav of Beis Din of the Eidach Reidus in Yerushalayim. He's the author of the Mo'adim Muzmanim, which if anybody learned in yeshiva or not in yeshiva has studied for the last 40 or 50 years. He's also the author of Tshuvas Hanhagos and arguably, possibly maybe one of the top two or three paiskim in the world. Right, he's in his 90s already, so certainly somebody from the Dor Yashan, a Talmud of Great Griz, the Brisker Rav. And he'll be speaking about Hatzkos, Kiddushin, and many other topics. You're listening to us on WMCA 570, or at WMCA.com, or at NachumSiegel.com, and the Nachum Siegel Network. You can also listen to us on Monday morning at Nachum Siegel at 11 to 12, or on WSNR 620 AM, Wednesday night between 9 and 10. So before we go to Rav Sternbuch, I want to just say one more thought, an amazing thought. We had the most incredible guest 2 weeks ago, Rabbi Yosef Eckstein from Dor Yesharim, and I'm getting so many emails about him that just to put it very briefly, here's a man who had 4 children who died of Tay-Sachs, Rachman Olatzvan, and he was inspired to start Dor Yesharim, and he said there was a hospital in Crown Heights, I think he said it's called Kingswood, that had a Tay-Sachs ward, that there was a years of a waiting list to get in because it was the only ward in New York City. And since it was so endemic in our community and proliferated with such a plethora of it in our community, there was years, the children usually die between 7 and 8, and after 2 or 3 years, the parents can't have them at home anymore. So the children would be sent to this ward, and there was years of a waiting list. So he said, because of Dor Yesharim, 3 years ago, I don't remember the exact number, they closed down the ward. Basically, it went bankrupt. He said, we eradicated Tay-Sachs from the entire community. There has not been a single event because of Dor Yesharim. He saved thousands and thousands of families the aggravation, to say nothing of the medical costs, which run into the millions of dollars. I mean, this man saved, I did a calculation, between $5 and $10 billion in medical costs. They should give him the Medal of Honor. Besides what it does to the siblings and to the parents, the aggravation, one person. So he took this weak, this terrible thing that happened to him, and he created it into, he used his weakness, his worst moment, to turn into something incredible. Right, Evan Masu Habayim Haisal Reish Pina, the despised, his blackest moment. And when you think of it, Yosef shines. Yosef is the most aggrieved, the most hurt person in the Torah. He's framed. They tried to kill him by his brothers. He sold, and he keeps rising and rising. The most successful person in whole Genesis and whole Sefer Bereishis. What's Yosef's trick? How does he do it? Where does he get the incredible energy that you like one of those, you know, you remember when I was a kid, they used to have one of these blow up, you know, Bozo the Clowns. You knock it down, it had a weight on the bottom, and boom, popped right back up again. How does Yosef do it? And why is that so important? Because all of us continually get knocked down. Happens often, either in business, in yeshiva, we don't get respect, we don't get this, our feelings get hurt, it happens in relationships, it happens, you know, the world is a tough place, life is tough. Yosef's like that clown, how does he do it? So let me share with you an amazing thought, just a powerful story. You know, there was this boy, he lives in Florida, and he gets inspired. Listen to his story. Tell me this isn't one of the most beautiful stories you ever heard in your life. So he decides he wants to go to Israel and become a lone soldier. There's a whole division of lone soldiers, boys who come from different countries. They have no family, and they become soldiers. So he becomes a soldier, and he becomes part of the, you know, infantry, and he learns how to drive a half-track. Well, he's driving a half-track, and, you know, there's lots of terrorism there. He goes over a mine. It blows up the half track, and it blows off his whole right arm and part of his right shoulder. So, you know, Israel is one of the best medical systems in the world. They bring him in, they fly him in by helicopter, they sew back his arm, they give him blood, they save his life. And now he's missing a right arm, a little part of his shoulder, and they give him a medal, and then he goes back home to Tallahassee. So he goes to school, he goes to college, and he's like the Nebish, of course. You have all these, you know, macho guys walking around, and he has a left arm, of all things, and one, a sleeve that's drooping. So he decides, listen, I don't want to be a loser, a nebbish, a backwards. So what does he do? He asks around. He says, I'm going to start learning judo. So he finds, finally, this one won't take him, that won't take him. He finds one teacher, I'll teach you. Goes for 6 months. He becomes really good at it. He has a knack. So he goes to his teacher. He says, listen, I want to compete intercollegiately when we play other I want to compete in judo. So the teacher says, listen, I know you're good. Don't be silly. With one arm, you're not going to be able to compete. Don't be stupid. So this kid's a tough kid. He says, look, he goes on the internet, does a million Google searches, finds an old Korean teacher, finds him. The old Korean teacher says, me teach you judo to compete. No problem. It's old Korean master. He goes, I'm not sure if it's judo or jujitsu. I'm sorry. And he teaches him and he says, look, here's one move you have to keep on trying again and again and again. And he teaches him this move among all the other moves. He says, look for an opening. Trains him for 6 months. 6 months later, there's a big on the board. They're playing Florida State. And one of the people competing is the one-armed judo guy. Thousands of kids come. Interesting to see a one-armed judo kid compete. So the guy from Florida State comes out, a tough kid, sees him, feels a little bit, but then he sees he's good. Knocks him down. They fight again, knocks him down again. The ref comes over. He says, listen, tells the one-armed guy, you made your point that you're a tough kid, but I said I'm going to. He says, look, please don't stop the fight. Okay. The next round, he sees an opening. He sees, does his move, knocks the guy. The guy's knocked out cold. He wins the match. They raise his one arm. Everybody's cheering. So he goes back and he asks his coach. He asks the old Korean coach. He says, why this move is the move you taught me more than any other move? So the old Korean looks at him, old wise Korean. His eyes twinkle and he says, only way to stop this move is grab opponent's right arm. Only way, stop this move, grab opponent's right arm. His blown off right arm became his biggest strength. And when you look at Rabbi Eckstein, you see that. So it says in last week's parasha, so Yaakov defeats Sarai Shalesov. And what does Sarai Shalesov say? Shalcheini ki Allah hashachar, send me. I'm a malach. I must go up before the dawn. And what does Yaakov say? Loi ashalechecha ki im barcheini. I won't send you. I want your blessing. Your blessing. What does he need? A bracha from Sarai Shalesov. And you know, Rabbi Eckstein and the Karate Kid tell us the answer. Because what does Esav represent? Who Esav? Who Malach HaMavis? Who HaSatan? Who HaMakatrik? All the darkness that happens to us in life. And what does Yaakov say? He says, I don't just want to beat the darkness. I want to get blessed from it. You know what it means, blessed? You know how jiu-jitsu or judo work? The harder your opponent comes at you, when you flip them, as hard as they came at you, that's how much energy it creates when they fly over your shoulder if you flip them. Or you trip them. That the harder they come, boom, they convert the negative energy into positive energy. What does Yaakov say? I don't want to survive, Esav. I don't want to survive my darkness, my depression, my defeats, bankruptcy, divorce, whatever it may be, broken, really. I want to come away blessed from it. I want to use that energy and channel it into something positive, that I come away stronger. That only way to defeat, grab right arm. Turn those Nebuch, the tragedy that happened to him, into something so positive like Darius Sharim. And when we look at Yosef in life, his brothers come to him and they cry for forgiveness in Vayechi after Yaakov passes away. And they say, please, Anna, Slachna, forgive us. And what does Yosef say? He says, you meant to do a great injury. Atem chashvem alai l'ra. But alaykim chashvem alai l'taiva. He says, you sent me to the worst place in the world, to Egypt, to die. But here in Egypt, I was able to feed the entire world. I used that energy of Egypt, the productive power of the West, to feed the entire world. I turned all those bad thoughts, all that bad energy, judo, I turned it into good energy. It was barcheini. So if we in life can take our worst moments, and there are moments when we're hurt, and when we have to really dig down deep into ourselves to look for strengths that otherwise we never would have had, and we become enlightened and sensitized, and we sort of become, for that moment in time, multidimensional when we're in pain. If we take that enlightenment and turn it into something positive, it's the judo kid, it's the karate kid, it's the barcheni of Yaakov, and what Yosef says, lemich yishlachani aleichem lahachis amrav, I turn that bad energy to feed the entire world. So that's what we learn from Yosef, from Yaakov, from Rabbi Eckstein, and from the karate kid. So one of the halachic topics that is certainly making the news, it's been on the Huffington Post, the Forward, it's been on many different papers because it's getting a lot of controversy, is the divorce or lack of divorce of Tamar Epstein, who was married to Aaron Friedman in 2006. In 2007, they had a child together. And in 2010, they had a civil divorce, but he did not give a get. And supposedly there was an issue that she moved out of the Washington area and moved back to Philadelphia, and since he works, he works for a congressman. He's the attorney for a congressman who's, we'll get to that in a minute. So he was not able to get visitation in the child because he has weekends, and he can't, for much of the year, he can't leave Washington and get to Philadelphia in time to see his daughter. So she insisted upon moving out of the Washington area back to Philadelphia, where she comes from. But it meant, in effect, that he would lose visitation of his child because he couldn't get back there in time for Shabbos. So he refused to give her a get. And it created, you know, she was an aguna, basically, then, the fact that you couldn't get a get from 2005 till today, 2010 till today, which is basically around 5 years. And a few weeks ago, or actually a few months ago, she got remarried without a get to Adam Fleischer on September 24th, which is, I guess, around 2 or 3 months ago, in Memphis. And Rabbi Nota Greenblatt, I'm reading from, this is from the internet, from the Forward, officiated at the wedding. Now, subsequent to the wedding, so she got basically an annulment from Rabbi Greenblatt. And subsequent to that, there was a big letter that was circulated around the Eretz Yisrael and was signed by the Badatz, and in particular, Rav Moshe Sternbuch, who's the Ravid, who we'll have on the show in a few minutes. And it was a protest, Macha Gedayla Neval Nesesab Yisrael, a terrible act has been committed, because there is no such a concept of an annulment by a Jewish marriage, unlike the Catholic Church, where there is an annulment. It often happens many, many years after the marriage. You know, divorce is not allowed according to Catholic doctrine. So wealthy people pay some type of a fee to the church and they're able to get an annulment. Well, in the equivalent, they were married here for the basically for the better part of living together for 4 years and in effect married for the almost 9 years. So he writes that there is no concept of an annulment. So I have Rabbi Sternbuch on the phone, but a little bit more forward before that is there was recently a letter on the internet that was published, and it was by Rabbi Shalom Kamenetsky. And he basically, his heter is, he says, look, he writes in the letter that he said, I did this with great care because being mater anashis ish l'shuk is from the most, he says, is davar chamer, right? He says it's sakana nifla kalos binyanim chamurim. He takes it with great, but he said he spoke to the doctors and they confirmed with him that the Aaron Friedman, the chassan, was both OCD, obsessive compulsive, as well as suffered from paranoia, and therefore you could not live with him. And he says, and I'm going to be soimach his psak. He says on a psak from Reb Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein in Chelek Evin Ezer, Aleph, Simon Pei writes a story, says that, and Rabbi Kamenetsky writes, he says, you cannot, a shaita, if somebody marries somebody who is basically doctors consider mentally retarded, they do not need a divorce. And he bases this on Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe says that a shaita, somebody who medically is considered basically retarded, does not need a shaita, does not need a get. And Rav Moshe says that he spoke to the doctors, and the doctor said, ki hu mishuga mamish l'chol davar, that the case of Rav Moshe, where somebody was married for 14 years and the guy was not capable of giving a divorce, Rav Moshe said he does not need a divorce because he spoke to the doctors and he is insane l'chol davar. And he found in the papers that he walks around naked And he's Ma'abid Mashinoistim Loim, which is one of the simonim of a shaita. And this is the basis of Rabbi Kamenetsky's heter for this aguna. And boy, was the fellow in this case, in it, Moshe talks about, was actually institutionalized in a hospital called Ferry Point. So Rabbi Kamenetsky says that based on this, in this fellow, Aaron Friedman is considered basically, because he's OCD and paranoid, would have the same rule as the insane fellow from Rabbi Feinstein's tshuva. The issue that obviously that you could debate is in this case, Aaron Friedman is the tax counsel for the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee in Congress, David Kemp. So he is the legal counsel for the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, which I know, you know, when you watch the Republican debates today, you think that indeed it could be an insane asylum, anybody who's listened to them. But notwithstanding all of the above, this fellow has one of the most important jobs in Congress now, Aaron Friedman, representing, you know, he's writing all the laws of tax in the United States, which, okay, tongue-in-cheek, you could say are truly insane. But certainly to compare this to somebody who's institutionalized and walks around naked and loses everything is obviously something that could be a debate, and I won't take sides in this. But so in an effort to get some clarity, I called up Rabbi, I got Rabbi Sternbach on, you know, on the show to talk about this, and I also used it as an opportunity to beat the drum in one of my favorite issues, which is the concept of prenuptials, because rather than annulments, which, you know, according to, you know, halacha are obviously, unless you're Catholic, are very difficult. The annulments are, the concept of prenuptials are supported both by the Ramab, the Eved, but by the Nesivis in Kuf Lamed Aleph Brurah in the Pesachei Tshuva Lechatchila. So let's see what Rabbi Sternbach has to say about this. In America recently, there's been somewhat of a very hotly discussed case about a Hafgas Kiddushin that was done for a woman who was married, who had a child. She was married for around 5 years before she separated.
They had no rights to do it against the halacha. But a woman lives with a husband, has a child, and suddenly you make up for constitution, you can't do it. It's against all the halachas which we know from different old generations. If you come like that, you can destroy the whole of the divorce by it. And always women say their husband is not, he's mentally no good, and he was the whole time no good. We'll be destroying the whole of marriage by Eden.
Kvayt HaGayin Shlita, in America, the Aguna issue is such a painful issue. And unlike Eretz Yisrael, where the Rabbanim could take away people's passports and use all types of pressure, the Rabbanim here have very little, their hands are tied. So one of the few, perhaps the only solution that is available to us are the prenuptial agreements that the RCA has put into effect and that many people do use. So we would love to hear the Gaon's opinion about the prenuptials, and because without it, it puts Rabbanim into terrible positions. For example, Rabbi Greenblatt, who officiated at the wedding of this quote-unquote Aguna, he just listened. You know, when you hear somebody come again and again saying their hands are tied, their hands are tied, their hands are tied, he's an old man, and he's a gentle and a loving Rav, and their hearts melt and they're put into a terrible situation. Would you say that they're doing the right thing with this prenuptial?
He had mercy on the woman, which there's no solution.
Correct. So the only possible solution that the Rabbanim in America are able to come out to heat on Bnei Yisrael who are being abused was the concept of the prenuptials, and they were Simich on the Nesivis, and they were Simich on the Marik, which the Rama says that B'dieved you could use. Now, I know that the Goyin, the Ravid, is against it, but on the other hand, it's Karev to Pikuach.
They had the prenuptial agreement?
No, they did not. But what the Rabbanim in America are telling people now is they're saying, we don't want anymore in the newspapers where women come crying and they're saying that they're held hostages. So the solution going forward that they want to do is say, let's try the Nesivis and let's try to be Simech on the Marik. And it, because it actually causes people to leave Yiddishkeit when they say it's so abusive to women. And it happens, the granddaughter of Reb Moshe Feinstein was held a hostage. So it's unfortunate. You have a lot of prutzim. And I know
once you put forward this suggestion, there are lots of cases which is not valid. Some cases yes, some cases no. As I told you, Such a decision needs to be made by Gedolei Yisrael, which we haven't got today.
But it's a Sfeksfeka. We have the Rama says
we're trying to make something new. All the generations they suffered from Agunas. Now we found a solution by the marriage to state what you said, prenatal agreement. That's really because we should be able to do it.
But why can't we be Simech on the Torah's Gittin? On the Nesivis was an Adam Ilan Ravrave we have in the Torah's Gittin. And it's Karev to Pikuach Nefesh, where it's a mitzvah to be Mishtadalin.
It's not any Surim in the chat, Pikuach Nefesh. Pikuach Nefesh not Chakin Surim.
But the Nesivis.
We'll never be matter in ancient feast because of Pekuach Nefesh.
But the Nesivis was matter, this concept.
It's not sure always the Nesivis was matter. Else it wasn't matter like a tchila they do here.
I mean, the Rama was matter at B'dieved.
The Chazon Ish says, and the Gedolei Yisrael said, it's not so easy.
And the fact that I'm saying that the Marik was Materit, so a Knas Mum in B'dieved, the Taz in Shin Vav.
Whatever happens, what he did, he has to give a regret, that's sure.
Yeah,
after the China's Tetzim is there, is there.
And a Vlad Mamza it would be.
The Rav Mamzer is the biggest child, because Rav Mamzer, even if he's an honus, also the Rav Mamzer. The Tetzer is there, some possible say, since she relied on the Rabbonim who did it, we don't say Tetzer is there, she gives a get and get married again afterwards and finished. But the Mamzer is certainly a Mamzer. So she was an Ishishish, she was a child of the Mamzer. The Mamzer, even the person is an honus, she also become a Mamzer.
So would the Rav say that the Torah's Gittin, the prenuptial, is usable in any circumstance?
What do you mean?
Would it be possible if there was a Rav who, an Adam Gadol Rav, who personally oversaw on a particular case of prenuptial, would it be possible to is there any possible Eitzah to avoid these cases of old Agunas we have here in America?
The Agunas are not only in America. There's not a new America. Agunas have always been in old times, always. It's not in America that there are Agunas. The Jewish law allows, in certain cases, a woman is in Aguna. That's what the Shemai they wanted, whatever happens. Sometimes the woman gets married, and the day after the marriage, she finds out afterwards he got an illness, a cancer. She leaves the home and has to live with him. She won't divorce him. They carry life. Everybody's got their own life. Some women can't get married at all. So they what can they do?
Okay.
We have to try what we can. And that's it. We strive. We can. Every Aguna, we try to be matter as much as we can. If we can't, we can't.
So, Rabbi Sternbach has basically a recap said that he's against the prenups. And we're going to have him on a little clip in a minute where he says it's just very hard to oversee and there are exceptions, etc. It doesn't seem necessarily statutorily he's against them, but more about that you can't make new takanis and to enforce it, and we'll hear him say that in a minute. But more than that, he said that on this particular case, in his opinion, would be Havlad Mamza. And because the concept of annulment, again, by Jewish marriage really doesn't exist unless the person, as per Moshe, is certifiably insane, and that is Rav Sternbach's position on that, which seems consistent with Rav Moshe Feinstein. And honestly, I think that if wives get letters that their husbands are OCD or suffer from paranoia, I think there are going to be a lot of divorced husbands in the world because, you know, many of us, or a lot of divorced wives also in the world, but you could get, you know, you could be, just like you could be kaif and ish on again, you could be kaif and ish, it works two ways, you could be kaif and isha. How many husbands say, my wife, geez, I just can't believe what a nut she is. You know, they say the story of the person who says, you know, a few people are saying, one guy says, you know, my wife is a malach, and the other one says, I know, mine also isn't human. So once we get into this, it really gets very tricky. So that's Rav Sternbuch's position, but let's go back to listening to him again.
The first question of yours about prenatural agreements is doubtful, and in many cases, which is not valid, and therefore this can be a big danger in marriage. Which answers the second question about the kosher switch.
Rabbi Sternbuch, the Nesivis in Kuf Lamed Aleph, you wouldn't believe is usable for prenuptials?
But there are cases even with the Nesivis, it's not clear that it's good. It's not possible in a few words to say. It's sometimes yes and sometimes no, and to make it for a takana was definitely dangerous.
Would it be possible to set up a Bezdin that would create overseed in a way where it was
any
possible?
Any new takana in our time is dangerous. We were not great enough to make takanas. All we do is to accept what we heard from our parents, our future generation, the Goyne Olam. Today we're not suitable to make any new takanas.
There's in Eretz Yisrael what's going on now. You have people going up to the Har HaBayis, Shaloi Kehalach, obviously, and they're raising on, they're inciting the Arabs, and it's causing Nebuch a lot of Ritzicha and Hariga. Is somebody who goes up to the Har HaBayis doima to a roidif? The Mechaber, let's say in Shin Peches, says that a Mazayif Shtoris becomes a roidif to the Tzibur. Which, if somebody, because he's Goyrim, or a Moisa has a din of a roidif, if somebody goes up to the Har HaBayis and he knows because of that he's inciting and they will kill people because of that, is an Oilel Har HaBayis get a din of a roidif?
More or less. One can't say that the Arabs, they're certainly a Terence. Not sure that's the reason why they're making them. They could have other reasons. There's certainly one could say a shankless to read it here.
And would you say, would the Ravid say that on the following problem, this is something that a lot of people in Eretz Yisrael are discussing. A terrorist stabs somebody and he's shot by one of the guards and he's disarmed and he's lying on the floor. The person who shot him has one of two choices. He could call an ambulance and they take this Reitzeach to the hospital and they make him better. They put him in Tfisa. And then in a few years later, they let him out in an exchange from some soldier. Or while he's lying here on the floor and he can't do anything and he's not a Reidif anymore, you could kill him. La halacha, is he allowed to kill him or not?
We say these Arabs, if they succeed once, they do it again. We can't leave them free. We should, even without attacking, this type of Arabs we are looking for, who attack or prepare to give up their lives. If we find them, then those who kill them because they might come back tomorrow, the same thing.
So he has a din of a roida forever. You could kill him.
That's what these people who kill them say. I'm just telling you what they say. I don't know what.
Okay, then can I ask the Ravid one more thing? Could you tell what is the opinion? I know that there's a tremendous hisnagdis to the draft in Eretz Yisrael, even for Yidin who are, let's say, not in yeshiva. And my question is that we you know, when you learn the parsha, who were the ones who went back, right? Mi sheyesh lechet biyadei, afilu sach ben tefila shel yad letefila shel reish.
Yeah, they went down to no chet biyadei. They
right.
Understood that.
So really, shouldn't from a people?
Nobody says we don't need an army. Nobody said it. But the army are together with girls, and they're teaching them at Kochi Ritzim Yodi. Ben Gurion said the army is not made only to fight against the enemy, to teach our boys the Israeli way of life. It's not an army, it's not a normal army like all over the world. All over the world, you take an army to fight. Here, the army's got nothing to the purpose of the fight. First and foremost, to be what they call it, the new Israeli way of life. They think we'd be the whole time relying on the Shabbos Baruch, and that's not the way. It was taken to our hands, and that's why it's very dangerous. We didn't allow it.
And what about, let's say, the Machna, they have like the Frum army, the separate, where they're separate from boys and girls, and they have...
Yeah, first of all, they're not reliable. They can't do it. But even they, it's nothing quick for boys and girls. The person who teaches them is always making the laughs of the Frum. A friar can't talk 10 words without Nivepeh.
So, theoretically, if there were from a manhigim, would it be possible?
In the truth is, there are more religious Jews in the army than they are altogether religious Jews. One can call them datiyim and the charedim. Datiyim go with the l'shem yichud, and they are quite enough there. The charedim, they don't mean, but they need them. There's no necessity to need in the army. There's the friar as well, with a large number who are freed. They want to teach them this should be their way of life, and that's why we can't agree to it. Ben Gurion used to say always, our army is not a normal army. Our army is to teach them to be the Israeli type of man.
I thank the Ravid very much for his time, and I say that I've spent 1,000 hours learning my Adam Uzmanim.
Do you see the Chuvus van August?
Yes, the Tshuvas van Haggis, I see, and I've gone through many, many Tshuvas van Haggis. I went through this morning, Ian, the Tshuva that the Ravid wrote about using the milk of the behema that ate from Shvius or Machalas Asuris. I could tell you that I never had the schus of meeting the Ravid, and I'm sure you wouldn't consider me, you wouldn't call me a Rebbe, but I'm for sure a Talmud.
I got your sefer this morning. Mishnah with Mishnah Achrona.
Yes, and if you look, you'll see I quote the Mayadim Azmanim hundreds of times.
I see, mother. I didn't see the Tshuvas van August, but Mayadim Azmanim myself.
Yeah.
Oh, Hashem, no. Shmaitsev, Pepuma. Let's hear in. What do you say?
I said I would hope that when I'm in Eretz Yisrael, I would have the honor of being able to meet you.
You come to Eretz Yisrael sometimes.
Occasionally, yeah.
Shit.
I would like to just mention one shaila that I think is going to be incredibly relevant to the whole world, that perhaps the Goyen should write on. And I mentioned it last time, but I think it's going to change. It's changing the world, as shaila. It's going to change. That in the United States, 2 weeks ago, they came out with something that never happened before in Brias Olam. And what is it? That they took two different minim, a dog tameh and a dog toher, and genetically they were mizdavig them.
Yeah, they're doing it already.
But in the United
States, working on it a long time.
Right, but it came out the first time the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration,
in
America.
There might come a day, today it's only made as an experiment, there might come a day in many, many years' time that all the fish will be a big side of them.
So the food...
And
the Food and Drug Administration...
It's not allowed, but if you do it, what's good to do in Torah or Tomei? If we look after the simonim, or we look after the facts. You can make today a Torah with a simon of a Tomei.
Right, so the Food and Drug Administration...
It's not simply here in America. I didn't think anybody living today in his life would be... They're doing it experimentally already.
So I want to just tell the guy that I could send you the article that the United States Food and Drug Administration permitted the manufacture of a salmon that has in it a dog tame eel, and they said that it's going to be in the supermarkets in 2 years. And what happened is that as soon as the Food and Drug Administration announced...
There is a salmon called Rock.
It's
very similar to salmon, we used to remember.
Right, I'll send the Goyen's Einikel the article, but they said in 2 years, and the reason why they're allowing it is because it grows twice as fast as a regular salmon, so it's going to be much cheaper to produce. but it's going to have snapir vikaskeses, but it's also going to have the genetic in it, the genes of an eel. So the shaila is it going to have a din of a kala yaitza min atame? And are you going to say that even though it has snapir vikaskeses, but it should also have a din of yaitze because it has genetic material of an eel in it? And I think that it's going to be tully in a Reb Chaim in the Sefer, because according to Tosfos and Nidan Daf Nun Amid Beis, Tosfos says that there's no din yaitza by anything that if it comes from an egg, because since my afra there's no din yaitza.
The Maritis says different. It's a whole shayla this.
And Reb Chaim in
Sefer. The Simone Mometame or the Minis Mometame? It's the big shayla when Tzafnus Panech all of them talk about.
Right, right. The Tzafnus Panech argues on the Marit. But
we'll come to the time that they ask, we'll have to see what to do.
But I think it would be a tremendous tayelos for the Tzibur. I could send the guy in the article because as soon as the U.S. It took the United States.
The first time I hear that within 2 years it would be in the market.
Right, but as soon as they allowed it,
where are they going to have it? In special ponds they're going to make.
They're
going to
make it in special ponds, and the problem is that the United States government said they do not have to market any differently than regular salmon.
They allow it to be marketed as normal salmon?
As normal salmon.
That's not going to be good for those who eat salmon. I can't hear it should be within 2 years. Send me the article.
I'll send you, but it gets more frightening, I want to tell the Rav, because it took the United States six...
Send me the article.
I'll send you the article as soon as we get off the phone. As soon as they were matter it, the FDA, it took them 16 years to agree to the concept of genetically modified creatures. But as soon as they said that they would allow it, a whole bunch of companies announced that they are going to start. They're going to do a chicken that has a gene of a ham in it because it would have more fat in it. They said now that the FDA has announced that they're allowing it, they said that they're going to a whole bunch of new for chickens, for geese, so it's going to become a very common problem. Mm. And I think that it would be a tremendous tayelas for the tzibur if the Amud HaRav, our doyer, the Ravid, would write the first tshuva on this topic. Thank you very much. It's been a great honor speaking to you.
Kol tov.
We've spoken in the past about Ratzah Kadosh Baruch Hu Shutfim B'Tachtayinim, how the Rabbeinu Shalom is looking for partners here in this world to complete Maisa Bereishis. And we have with us on the line one of the partners of the Rabbeinu Shalom, one of the Tzaddikim of Klal Yisrael, Rabbi Simcha Scala, who heads Chai Lifeline. Welcome, Rabbi Scala.
Thank you very much. It's humbling to be called a Tzaddik, and even more awestrucking to be called the partner of the Rabbeinu Shalom. I'm just a servant.
Okay, Rabbi Scala, tell us about what does Chai Lifeline do?
Chai Lifeline is the largest Jewish and one of the largest organizations in the world that deals with catastrophic pediatric illness or the effects of illness on any community of pediatrics. And it's a very specific support service organization that supplies needed support for the client, the patient, their siblings, the family, and the community in order for them to be able to survive the present and be able to live in the future as a healthy, emotionally healthy person, no matter what the after effects of their illness will be.
Give me a few examples.
The Chai Lifeline is very broad today. It's a worldwide organization that encompasses about 4,300 families and about 12 regional offices throughout the world. But let me give you an example of a child that is diagnosed with cancer. Their first phone call most of the time is to Chai Lifeline, either to be able to understand and navigate the difficulties in the medical world, perhaps finding the the best doctors or what the options are of the best doctors. And then the High Lifeline will be able to assign a case manager to the family to be able to accompany them to the hospital, to be able for them to adjust in this very foreign, difficult environment called the hospital world. And then we apply significant support services for all members of the family, whether it's the client, obviously the patient gets care. The parents have a support system of talking to other parents, talking to a professional, talking to a licensed social worker or if need be therapy. And the siblings have specific support. And the school gets specific support, the community. You know, one of the most dramatic effects of illness is really the collateral damage. Everyone concentrates on the actual patient, but all the people around the patient really, really hurt very, very hard. And that's primarily with an illness. And then, of course, you have the recreational part of High Lifeline, which is Camp Simcha, and Camp Simcha Special for children with cancer or for other types of illnesses.
Now, what is the charge for Camp Simcha?
There is no charge for any service of High Lifeline.
What inspired you to start such an incredible organization?
I remember the first time I spoke to Reb Shlomi Zalman Auerbach about this, because he was really one of the architects of the global vision of High Lifeline. I used to fly there literally every month, and he had this global vision of a chesed organization that was going to unite the world. And it just so happens that the last thing that he told me before he was nifter, before he was nifter, correct? Before I had a chance to go there, the last thing he told me was, "Yeah, it's kedai, it's worthwhile to create this organization just for one person." And I kind of was totally startled by that statement. Like, what does that mean? We're talking about creating an organization that will unite Klal Yisrael and under the banner of Chesed. And then I understood what he meant, that if we create an organization that just has a mass numbers, it's not really what the optimal objective is. The objective is that every person that is falls under the banner of High Life has to feel like they're the only person. And that has been our mission.
Is it a mother? Is it a father? Something must have ticked besides just you decided one day to do this.
Baruch Hashem, we have six healthy children. And nothing.
Did your parents, was it Reb Shmuel Birnbaum? Was Reb Shmuel Brody? Where did you get that germ changing?
They inspired me. Reb Shmuel Birnbaum and Reb Shmuel Brody, and they inspired me to do for Klal Yisrael. They invested a lot. I guess they knew that I wasn't going to really grow in learning, so they knew that. No, I'm just kidding. but they inspired. This is the direction that they pushed me, and kind of the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just set the tone that this is the pathway that I have to follow. I probably would have never applied for the job, but this is sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu just sends you in a way, and then you have the privilege of being part of that way, and I feel it's a great privilege that I've had and my family has had to be able to affect tens of thousands of people in such difficult situations and actually bringing together Klal Yisrael, because I know of no Jewish organization in the world under Torah auspices, and this is a very, very, and we are strictly under Torah auspices, that is able to unite the payas and ponytails together. And we do this not behechruch, we do this peshita, that this is our philosophy, that every Jew is equal, every Jew in need is equal, and we were not going to compromise on any halachic principles. On the other hand, we're going to be able to be all embracing and all encompassing.
And Reb Simcha, could you, sometimes smaller is bigger, can you, you hear like 10,000 people, 20,000 people, can you choose two or three stories that stick out in your mind of things where you've made a difference, where you've touched people's lives, where you went to a simcha afterwards, or something where it just gripped you?
Let me tell you a story that I had a number of years ago in a catering hall in New York, the Marina Del Rey. a week before that, a couple of weeks before that wedding, I was driving with one of my sons. I took a day off, which is really not a common thing. I took a day off, and I took them someplace in the Catskills. And in the middle of the trip, I get a phone call. I get a phone call from a doctor in Miami, Florida. He said, "Rabbi Scholar, do you remember me? I am Meira's father." Now, the honest to goodness truth is I didn't really remember him, but I told him I remembered him. And he said, "Meira's father." Meira, 10 years before that, was diagnosed with a very serious cancer. And I met these parents at the retreat. We have a number of retreats where we bring families together and psychologists and rabbanim to give them help and support. And this guy and this doctor literally broke down in our conversation. And he said to me, you know, what's going to be? And I said to him, listen, you're going to follow this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help you, Mitzvah Hashem. And then he said to him, well, how could I pay you back? I said to him, you don't have to give me anything. He said, how could I pay you back? The way how you can pay me back is when she will get married, you are to invite me to the wedding and give me a bracha under the chuppah. I kind of just said this not because I wanted a bracha. I just said it like whatever. So I'm driving I'm driving upstate. And I get a phone call from this doctor. He says, "Rabbi Scholar, do you remember me? I'm so and so's father." Okay, I'm Meira's father. Meira is engaged. Meira is getting married. The wedding is going to be in the Marina del Rey at this and this time. Okay. I get to the wedding. It was one of those busy Sundays where you have four weddings. I get to the wedding in the Marina del Rey. I'm not sure how many people in the room knew that she was how sick she really was, but I was. They call me up for the for a bracha. I come up to the bracha. I hold the kais in my hand. The father, the mother, and the kala are the three people that knew this conversation. I will tell you that you were able to collect the tears into the kais. And I got the bracha. And this young woman right now is a mother of a few children. That to me was one of the most touching moments. You know, I remember another story. I remember a story that happened years ago, where we had a weekend, and there was a young boy by the name of Erez, who just had his leg amputated, and it was on Shabbos, and he was asking for the stairs to go up to his room. So I went to Erez. I said, "Erez, take the elevator. It's 100% for you. It's okay." He says to me, "I don't have any head to take an elevator. I have a foot. I have one leg." It's Mikam Chisrael. You know.
So, you know, there's a story. Let me share a story with you. That the Kaidan of a Hasidim used to say that Reb Chaim Briske and all the whole Brisk is near Schus. What's the story? They say that the Kaidin of a Rav, Reb Noach Kaidin of a, was in Slutsk, and he used to say by the Beis Halevi's house. So he comes to the Beis Halevi's house one time, and the Beis Halevi is Iceman. She's not, what is it, Chaimke was sick. Mm-hmm. And it seems he was a Chaylam Asukin. So the Noach Kaidin of a told him, listen, it says by Avram Avinu when he was Machnas Eirach, he says, Vayorotz, Vayikach, everything's Lashon Avar. And then suddenly it says, V'hu Oymed Aleim. So the Kaidin Avar asked Reb Chaim, the Beis Halevi, why does it change from Avar to Hoyve? So he said, why? He said, because Avram Avinu has a Haftacha, that when somebody does Chesed, Avram is Oymed Aleim. He's standing by their side at that moment. Forever. So he said, the Chazal say that there was a precious stone, Margolius Tovah Yimunechas B'Tzavari Shal Avram, V'Kala Mestakel Bo Miyad Nirpa. He said, so if Avram is here, look at that Evan Tovah, and be Mespal for Chaimke. So he said, and Reb Chaim was Nisrapa, so Kaidin Av used to say Reb Chaim Briskes and Hauschus. And I'm wondering, when you were standing under the chuppah there, if you felt Avram Avinu standing next to you.
I'm telling you, if you walk in if you walk into Camp Simcha one any day, not a particular day, any day, and you see hundreds of children that are very, very ill or very, very compromised, and you see this, the Simchas HaChaim, you know, that they have, and they're dealing with their situation. They're taking their disability and they're making it into a different ability. And they're okay, you know, they're okay with their situation, even though they know their situation is compromised from their from somebody else. You see that, and then you see the staff members, you know, girls, the boys, you know, giving 150% of their time and their energy to make to helping these you know, these clients and these campers. You see that pure and unadulterated chesed, and you see this Simchas HaChaim, Shechina Shuya Boy. You know this is a holy place. I've seen myself, Goyne Rosh Yeshivas who have come to grace our presence in Camp Simcha, just stop in the middle of their tour around camp and go to a tree and start davening. And I once asked one of the Rosh Yeshivas, like, what are you doing? He says, well, the Shechina is here. When so many people are doing so many good things, the Shechina is here. This is the privilege that we have. I mean,
tell us one more story, Rabbi Scala.
One more story of a story. You know, he was a young man who, when he was a young boy, had a serious heart condition. And over the course of the next 18 years, he got 2 heart transplants.
Nice.
And though intellectually he's a brilliant young man, you know what I mean? But you know, physically, you know, he walks, he talks, he whatever. But you know, he's a little compromised. And what was his desire in life? His desire in life was he just wants to be like everybody else, get married, and have a fam, and you know, have a life. There was this young girl, came from a Chassidish home. This young man did not come from a Chassidish home. He came from a, you know, maybe yeshiva home, maybe a little bit different. And there was a young girl who was born with cystic fibrosis. Now all of these, you know, these fall under, you know, the non-cancer population. Obviously, that we deal with thousands of people like that. And what did she want? All she wanted to do her whole life was just be like everybody else and get married, like all of her other friends. So we have a program here called Sos Tosis. It's a shidduch program for people that are, you know, fall under these particular qualifications. And you know something? A couple months ago, they got married, and they're living, close to you. And they're living living a very, very wonderful life. They're the happiest couple in the world. The bottom line here is that people can make a difference. You don't. Organizations are made up of individuals. Individuals can make a difference. All they need to do is just get involved.
And how can our listeners? How can we get involved in something like High Lifeline?
They can call us up here, and there are plenty of opportunities for someone that wants to get involved. And there are plenty of organizations that not High Lifeline, you know, that they can get involved with also. They need to get involved. The Tzibur is made up of Yechidim. And Yechidim need to get involved. No matter how you can get involved, you need to get involved.
Thank you very much, Rabbi. Can I ask you, give our listenership, somebody who's done as many chassadim as you must have, big chassadim, give us all a bracha.
Kadosh Baruch Hu should help each and every one of you to continue to do good for Klal Yisrael. When we will do good, Kadosh Baruch Hu does good for us. And Be'ezah Hashem Yisbarach, we need tremendous rachmi shemayim, all of Klal Yisrael, in Eretz Yisrael, in Europe, all over the world. We need tremendous rachmi shemayim. Be'ezah Hashem, the Mogen Avram will be our Mogen. Until Mashiach to the King will come, Be'ezah Hashem, b'mehir b'yameinu, amen.
Amen. Thank you so much.
Be well.
I'd like to share with you at closing a Torah that it comes straight from Gan Eden. And it's also a very contemporary Torah. I had a Rosh Yeshiva here this week, And he was telling me that he's betwixt and befuddled. He says, because of the iPhone and the internet, there is so much pornography that's being consumed by young boys today. He says, I just don't know how to deal with it. It's really the mark of our generation. And since we try to do cutting issues, so I think it's worth addressing. So really, it's about this week's Parsha. What happens? You have Yosef. And what does it say about Yosef? The beautiful wife of Potiphera comes on to him. And he's lonely. He's beautiful. He's lonely. He's vulnerable. But what does it say? Vayimoen. He refused. Vayanas. And Rashi says, why did he refrain? Because it says, Rod Mosyuknei Shalaviv. So Yosef was able to refrain something that's really, this Rashi Shiva says he's dealing with in our generation, these issues, but except it wasn't pornography, it was real. So the question is, where did he get this strength to Vayimoen? And why did Mosyuknei Shalaviv come to him at that very moment? So here, listen to this amazing, amazing thought. There's one other time in the Torah it says Vayimoen, and it's also in this week's Parsha. Vayavoyu kolbanav ubnoisav lenachamai. His sons and his daughters came to console him. Vayimoen. He couldn't be consoled. He wept. He tore his hair. He cried. He was an oval for 22 years. He loved his son Yosef so much. So here's the Torah, my dear friends. You know where the second Vayimoen comes from? When a father loves his son so much, Vayimoen lehisnachem, for 22 years, such a father always stays in his son's memory. And then you have Vayimoen vayana sachutza. The two Vayimoens are attached. And you know, Dr. Pelkowitz told me, he said there's a Dr. Bergson who wrote a book called Family and Faith. And he said that it's a Christian book, but he said the main note mark, the name that to check whether sons follow in their parents' faith and religion is the relationship the father has with the son. So what does that mean to us in this age of the internet? Pick up the phone now and tell your son a compliment. Tell him something special that shows how much you love him. Tell him something about him that you really admire. And then we come to the second Vayimoyen Vayana Sachutza. Tell me this isn't a profound Torah that comes from Gan Eden. Next week we will have Rabbi Eitan Feiner. He will be speaking about Bashert. How do you know you married the right one? Difficult question. So we look forward to speaking to you, listening to you. Well, I look forward to speaking to you next week. All the best.